This is the American Dream, Dustin Rhodes, son of a plumber, daddy, and you're listening to the Bob Culture Podcast.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to a very special NASTA edition of the BCP. Excited at this time, this is long overdue to welcome my guest. Of course, you know him as the head honcho over at Damage 365 Promotions and Damage 365 Radio, our good friend, Mr. Kevin S. Nasta. Kevin, welcome. Applause track. How are you, bro?
Thank you. Appreciate it. Appreciate the real clapping instead of the audio input, fake clapping.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been a while. You know, we've bumped into each other at different shows, different live events, you know, whether it was just me hanging out or I brought talent there. So, I think I formerly got to be introduced to you at the first outdoor Titan Championship Wrestling show. I think yes. That was a goddesses show, to be exact.
That's right, man. And I love the shameless plug. We'll get that out of the way. Yeah. Man, first and foremost, like, thank you so much just for like bringing talent to these indie events, bringing them to the conventions. And when we hit, you know, we'll talk about this in a little bit, like, maybe we'll get into it now. Like, we hit that pandemic and everything's different now and you have to make that adjustment. Now everything's virtual, yeah. Man. How did your world, I mean, everyone's world changed, but how did your world kind of change when this pandemic hit, everything shut down, shows weren't running, and people started doing virtuals, man? Like, how were you able to adapt?
You know what, you know, somebody asked me this question too. And, my answer, I don't want it to come off as, someone that doesn't have any feelings or, doesn't sympathize with anybody affected by COVID and things like that. Look, it hit us all hard. You know, it hit some, you know, I'm lucky enough still to this day, knock on wood, I have not come in contact, or been affected by COVID. I've been around it a lot, you know, wrestling fans at different shows, things like that. Some family members have had it. So I've been lucky enough not to be diagnosed with it. And, but I have to say that, you know, if it wasn't for the pandemic, I personally and professionally wouldn't be in the spot that I am in. And that's, you know, going 24/7, no pun intended, 365 days a year with my business instead of, you know, doing a full-time job and then doing this on the side as a hobby slash, you know, weekend gig. You know, now this is my full-time thing. And, the pandemic has taught me to evolve and to adjust to the times and figure out ways to continue to bring the wrestling fans, you know, what they crave, you know, whether it's virtually or even still doing some small store signings until the conventions started to open up slowly in the last couple of months. So, you know, without the pandemic and being kind of shut down publicly outside, you know, we all are, not just me. I mean, all the promoters, as you've seen probably on your Facebook feed, you probably get thousands a day of people saying, hey, we're doing a virtual this day, virtual that day, this person. So, you know, it's made us more aware of the outlets to continue to make our business thrive. But, you know, I took that and I kind of ran with it because now, you know, I want this to be a full-time business. I don't want this just to be a weekend warrior kind of thing. I don't want this to be considered a hobby. You know, this is now what pays my bills and, you know, keeps my lifestyle going. And, you know, I'm actually enjoying it more now that I'm under the pressure of I need to make money to, you know, pay bills and things like that. And I'm enjoying it now because where I would have one weekend of signings and then I would have maybe 2 or 3 months before the next one, to worry about. Now I'm doing weekend things, a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and I immediately am getting, whether it's the following weekend or 2 weeks away until the next one. So I'm doing minimum 2 weekends per month of signings.
Good for you, man. And it's good to hear, like, you know, you roll with the punches, man. And it's good to see everyone kind of come out on top. Like, it is this new normal, man. And it's so exciting to see, like, the talent you bring in, man, whether it be to the indie shows, whether it be the virtuals, and whether to these conventions. I was actually at my first convention in almost over a year and a half yesterday down in Tom's River. And it was just so good to be there. Like, even just doing interviews, like, in person, I was like, man, like, I miss this. Like, Zoom is great. And again, like, you know, I've adapted. We do more like the video stuff now, you know, before we're just all audio, and it's cool. I get to connect with you and we can do all this stuff, but you know, you have that in-person element, you know, which for our interviews, I was like, man, I miss this, man. It was just so good to be back at a convention, all that stuff. So you have some stuff coming up that I believe is in person. Is this in Baltimore, yeah, you were saying?
We'll actually have one prior to that. This coming weekend, I have Wildcat Chris Harris, formerly of Impact Wrestling, coming in. We're doing Wrestling Universe in Queens from 12 to 2. And then we have a virtual meet and greet from my offices from 8 to 10. And then, yeah, then the following weekend, like I said, sometimes I don't have any time to rest. The following weekend, we're going to be at Baltimore Celeb Fest in Maryland with former Impact star Matt Morgan and former ECW star Kimona.
Yeah, man, I'm excited for that, man. It's cool. It's almost like you said, man, it's almost like, in a weird way, there is like more opportunity now, like with these virtuals going on, and now things are opening back up. So we're kind of like firing on all cylinders, man. It's really exciting. I wanted to ask you, man, well, first and foremost, like, to rewind a little bit, we always ask everyone this, like, how did you get your start in the business? Like, I see the collection back there, man. You must have been a fan growing up, right?
I was a wrestling fan growing up. I guess you would call it the golden era, you know, the 70s and 80s and very early 90s of wrestling. I stopped watching WWE when everybody jumped ship and went to WCW, which I think a lot of people did. And, you know, I was, as you can see in the background, I am a very large Randy Savage fan. No, I did not see the documentary yesterday.
I got to watch
it. No spoilers, please. And, you know, so kind of when he hung it up is pretty much when I hung it up as a wrestling fan watching.
Oh, wow.
I didn't start rewatching, picking it back up until 2012, which is when the year I started my podcast. And I said, you know, I sat down with my cousin. We literally sat down at a kitchen table with a couple of slices of buffalo chicken pizza. We had one laptop on a Lazy Susan so we can spin it back and forth between the two of us so we can, you know, check out some stats and things like that, because we were doing a sports show that also included some wrestling. It was 2012, day before WrestleMania, and we were going to give our predictions for Mania, even though we weren't going to watch it. So that's kind of where it started, and then people just kept asking for more wrestling content. And we literally phased out everything else and made it purely wrestling. And I did that show, Die Hard, pretty much weekly from 2012 to 2018. And I did about eight episodes in 2019. And then during COVID, for the first 2 months, I was doing, I was calling them COVID interviews, where I was speaking to talent to find out, you know, how they were coping with the lockdown, what they were doing to keep in shape and exercising so they can let others know, you know, what they can do at home to keep in shape since the gyms were closed and you technically, you know, weren't allowed to just randomly walk around for exercise. You know, what they were doing for, you know, eating wise to stay healthy and just to kind of stay out of harm's way. So we did that for about 2 months during the heat of the lockdown. And then I just kind of stopped. And, you know, the one thing I always give credit to podcasters is that, you know, you become a slave to your hobby. You know, you schedule something, you got to do it. You know, if you're telling fans, hey, we're going, you know, live, or we release a episode every Tuesday at 7 o'clock, then you have to do that. Because the 1 week you don't do it, you lose a couple of fans and they may never come back because now they found somewhere else to entertain themselves. And it became too much to be, I'll be honest with you, it became too much of a hassle. It was interfering with my personal life, you know, having to tell my wife, hey, hon, you know, sorry, we can't go out to dinner. I got to record a show, or I got a talent calling in. I got to record that interview, you know, even though it's not supposed to be released for another 2 weeks, but this is the only window I have. Yeah. You know, it became a little bit of a hassle. We kept the network running though, because we have a couple other shows under the umbrella, the all night long wrestling podcast, And we also have a movie reviews and trailer show called After the Credits. So those are awesome shows if you guys ever want to check them out. But, you know, as far as us right now, all our stuff is just archived up there. We don't plan on really releasing anything. But as far as getting into the whole, like, promotional side of it, the same year, 2012, when we decided to run the radio show, we decided, you know, let's go to wrestling conventions and start marketing our brand. You know, so we bought a table, we set up, you know, we had some cheesy, you know, internet made banner that we like taped to the table.
That's pretty much me right now. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, look, you did what you had to do. You know, you have limited amount of funds when you got no money coming in. So it's like, all right, let me go to like some weirdo, from God knows where in the world website, you know, to get a cheap banner made and, you know, duct tape, you're good. You know, always you show up to tape. Show. Always you duct sit, tape, yep. Yeah. You sit down at the table. We had a bunch of pens with our names on it and a website address. We had a couple of drink koozies. My wife made cookies and put them in bags. And
nice. On the ribbon, that's a nice touch. I like that.
And on the ribbon had our website address on it. So it's like, you know, we did what we could to draw attention, you know, positive attention to ourselves. We were also fortunate enough that a couple of the talents like Al Snow, Rhino, and a couple of other people were just like, hey, you know, they came over like, hey, what are you? And then when you tell them, they're like, oh, you, and they would sit down behind the table and like, hey, let's do an interview. And, you know, that's Al Snow was awesome. Cutting jokes and doing all his fun shit that he always does. And we started asking questions to neighboring tables about, you know, how this all works as far as bringing in wrestlers and things like that. So it was explained to us. And I, you know, I looked at my partner at the time and I said, hey, you know, maybe we should just like, you want to legitimate ourselves a little bit more. Let's bring in a wrestler, put it under our banner. You know, we can still run a little live thing on the side and they can sign, you know, on the other end of the table, or we get a second table, you know, just a little bit more legitimacy to ourselves. And that's what we started to do. And then the first ones we brought in was the late Axel Rotten, Gary Wolf. And we did a show up in Middletown, New York. I think it was called Wrestle Spectacular. That was run by John Menichino and James Sabias, who run East Coast Auctions and Legends of the Ring.
Okay.
And, you know, it wasn't the greatest convention in the world, but it got our feet in the door. Get our feet wet per se, into the industry. We did well, you know, from the limited amount of people that were there, but it was just about getting the word out and also showing other people that we were serious, that we weren't, you know, just clowning, looking to grab a buck and leave. So then we decided to do our first, you know, bigger convention, which was in New Jersey, called Legends of the Ring. And we brought in Cowboy Bob Orton. Wow. Former NWA Women's Champion Casey Carlisle, and we also brought in former ECW legend Justin Credible. So that kind of started it from there. That was 2013 at that time, and we've run from there. I mean, so basically late 2012 with our first wrestling related guests, to now we have just under 200 guests that we've brought in 9 years. We've have a huge network of fans and a huge network of followers, and we have a huge client list. We have four exclusive talent clients that are under our banner, which one from order found out the hard way yesterday to not tamper with. And
oh boy.
So look, the wrestling industry is not the greatest in the world,
but as I'm learning, yes,
as I learn every day, you read is probably true as far as how cutthroat and grimy it can be, but we don't function like that. My goal is, coming from a background of retail, that every customer should be treated as your number one customer, because that customer is, by word of mouth, is going to filter to other people and get you new customers. And word of mouth in retail is a lot stronger than actually paid advertisement, because, you know, paid advertisement, you put it in a newspaper, how many people read the newspaper? You do it on the internet, how do you know it's going to reach that person that you want to come to your store? It's not guaranteed. You know, putting little things in the mail, most of those people throw that stuff out, put it on people's windshield, it winds up on the ground in the parking lot. So it's like, the only guaranteed promotional marketing tool is word of mouth from the people that you take care of.
Wow. Very well said. I should be like taking notes here, man. It's really, that's really interesting, man. And yeah, you said it perfectly. At the end of the day, like as I'm getting more behind the curtain with stuff, and I'm very grateful for all like the great wrestlers and talent and promoters and, you know, the good people in the business. We always try to shine a light on like the positive aspect. At the end of the day, like I do see, you know, lines in the sand left and right. I do see drama left and right. And,
yeah.
And at the end of the day, you know, we're all independent contractors. We're all just trying to make our way individually. And more importantly, to me, it's always been about smiles on faces, man. It's about the fan. Right.
Exactly.
It's about the daddy-daughter dates. It's about family having something to do during this crazy time in the world, man. And that's why I'm appreciative of all you guys just doing these signings and making these things happen, man. It's so cool. But I wanted to ask you, man, so you guys started bringing in talent. You know, you said it was like some smaller conventions and stuff. Like, did you know, because you said this is back like 2012 or so.
Yeah.
Did you know this was going to be like, hey, man, like, I'm feeling this. Like, I want to do more of this. Like, did you know right away? Were you kind of like tentative? Was it tricky?
No, because I was still working a full-time job at the time. So it was kind of like the weekend warrior thing. And even sometimes that became a headache because working in retail, you're not guaranteed weekends off. So it was like, I was, you know, fitting it into my one weekend off a month, trying to squeeze it in there. And then using my radio show to, you know, promote what we were doing and using the Facebook community, things like that. I got heavily into like Twitter at the time, you know, trying to promote more paid ads and things like that, trying to reach out to a little bit further out past our demographics, you know, just not the zip code we're working in. We tried to spread out a little bit more. No, not at all. I had no idea what it would have morphed into now. You know, in my head, I'm like, yeah, we can make this work. We can make this work, you know. I've owned my own business in the past. I mean, it's not the first time. The Damage brand is pretty old. I established it while I was still in high school in 1991.
Oh, wow. Whoa.
And that was when I was doing web and graphic designing for local sports teams. And I was also doing graphic and jersey designs for teams. So I was designing their jerseys, and then I was designing them logos and websites for their teams. To keep their stats and their recaps and things like that. And that's where it originally was called Damage Inc. Sports, like Damage Incorporated Sports, which morphed from when I was a kid playing stickball where I grew up in Staten Island, New York. We always used to walk up to each other and we never let's say, hey, you know, what's the score? What inning you in? Blah, blah, blah. The generic question to get all the answers to that question was, what's the damage?
And nice.
People would be like, oh, yeah, it's 5-4, seventh inning. You know, we're almost done. And boom, you got all your answers with one question. And that's where it went from there. Being huge Metallica fans, too, they had the song Damage Incorporated. So we were like, yo, let's go with Damage Incorporated. It sounds like more professional. And as we started morphing out past just, you know, jerseys and websites and things like that, we added the word sports on the end because we didn't want it to – people to be confused with, you know, Metallica or just softball that we were covering or local baseball. We wanted to do everything. So we added the word sports on the end. And literally to the right of me, I have a nice wooden plaque that was made for me that says Damaging Sports, established 1991, hanging over my office door. I have softball jerseys hanging all over the hallways of my office where just all the jerseys from back in the day. So I started this, I was a junior in high school when I started all this. Everybody in school thought I was nuts. They were like, you know, dude, you're in high school, like enjoy your life. Like, what the hell are you, you know, working, like working.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, that's just the way it. My mother was in retail her whole life. So that was just the way I was raised, was to, if you want something bad enough, you know, you do what you have to do to work to get it. You know, and then as I got older, you know, I carried on. I was in retail. I continued. And then 1998, I opened up a greeting card and gift store in Staten Island, New York. Family business. We ran it until it was sold in 2005. And then I was a little burnt out. You know, I was a little burnt out from retail. So I started working for Major League Baseball from 2005
really?
To 2010. Yeah, I was a statistician and official scorer for the New York Yankees organization.
That's damn right.
So, yeah, I'm a Mets fan. I get paid by the Yankees.
Okay. I like the Mets too.
Yeah, people used to ask me all the time, like, we'd be doing, like, if I was in Staten Island doing a Staten Island Yankees-Brooklyn Cyclones game, people would they'd come in and be like, you know, how come you, they would point to me, like, how come you never wears any Yankee stuff? You know, I wasn't wearing any branded material.
I respect it, man. I respect it. You keep it real.
I was wearing the neutral stuff, you know, neutral polo shirt.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, I said, first of all, you know, I'm an official scorer, so I'm supposed to be, you know, unbiased. You know, I'm supposed to be a neutral party. Yes, I work for the organization, but I'm supposed to score games down the middle with no leaning to one side. I mean, I'm a Met fan, but I work for the Yankees. So I was like the perfect person to have there.
Actually perfect, yeah.
Right. So the stringers and the interns used to kid around with the media and be like, oh, yeah, he's a Met fan, but, you know, he worked for the Yankees. And they would turn around, like, and out loud, they'd be like, wow, how does that work? Like, what do you cheer for? And I turn around, I'd flight up, and I go, the paycheck.
Hey, there you go, man. You ain't wrong, man. I like that, dude. And obviously, I was a Yankees fan growing up, but I have a lot of friends that are Mets fan. I have nothing but love and respect for the Mets, man. They have some great pitching, you know, on commentary. More strikes than DeGrom on the mound. Like, you know, always get those little baseball references in there. And I haven't been to Citi Field yet. I've been to Shea a few times, but I got to get there. I hear it's beautiful, man.
Yeah, I haven't been back since 09. I went there the first game of the season, first game of the, actually in their existence, they had an exhibition game against the Red Sox. I went to that game. Oh, wow. And then I went to game two of the season against the Marlins. And then I haven't been back. I was on my little personal protest and boycott to the Wilpons. So as soon as they sold the team, now, you know, I'm thinking about going back, but with the whole COVID thing and having to deal with vaccines and you have to go, you know, prove that you had your test and I don't want any part of that nonsense. So I probably won't be going again this year, maybe next year. We'll see what happens with the world that we live in. If it gets a little less chaotic, maybe I'll go to a game. I mean, I'm a former season ticket holder. I had season tickets for 6 years. So they blow up my phone every year, you know, trying to get me back. And I've gotten some ridiculous offers from them to go back. And I still say no, but it just, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to do it, but
I get you, but you still love
it. It's crazy. So, yeah. So I did that from Major League Baseball. I was a statistician from 05 to 2010. I was working out of the offices in Chelsea, which coincidentally are the same offices that they use for instant replay now.
Okay.
That's the advanced media department. We used to cover all minor league baseball, do all their statistics as they were live. We were putting them up on the website. So people that didn't have access to live streams, they were able to follow it on MILB.com, which is the minor league site. And I left in 05, I mean, left in 2010 because I moved to New Jersey the year before and the commute driving back and forth and the expenses were, it was costing me almost $30 a day just in tolls. And that's not even gas. And then the aggravation of trying to find parking after 6 p.m.
Oh boy.
So, and plus I wasn't getting home till almost like 3-4 in the morning because the West Coast games, you know, start at 9 o'clock our time. And if they go extra innings, you know, I'm not getting home from the city until almost 3 a.m. So sleeping, I'm not waking up till 1 p.m, you know, grabbing lunch, boom, getting in a car, going back. It was just something I didn't want to continue doing. I kept though scoring for the Yankees until they lost the team last year. I mean, they lost the affiliation. They no longer right now have a team in Staten Island. And so, you know, I turned down a job from Somerset Patriots. They are the AA affiliate now of the Yankees. I turned down the position because I can't commit, you know, now I got this wrestling thing going. So
good problem to have, man.
Yeah. So definitely it is a good problem to have. Yes, absolutely.
I'm glad it's going well, man. I see you're happy about it, man. And it's, again, like we said earlier, you got to kind of roll the punches and all that, man. And it's good to see, you know, you're putting food on the table, you're succeeding, you're getting fans happy, which again, to me, is what it's all about, man. But I have to ask the hard-hitting questions here, like we always do absolutely. Here on the BCP, man. You said you were in New York. Now you're in New Jersey. Jersey was ranked the number one pizza state in the country. I'm hearing, you know, Brooklyn's the best pizza. I'm a pizza connoisseur, man. A lot of people say Connecticut. I've been to Chicago. I've had the deep dish. It's good. It's
that's different. Not pizza, dude.
It's not, yeah, it's not the same.
That's pizza casserole.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly. It was good, but it wasn't like, you know, it was like, I feel like we have great pizza here in Jersey. Who has better pizza, New Jersey or New York? And what is your pizza spot?
All right. So it literally was, I was hit up with this question yesterday too.
Oh, really?
I grew up in Staten Island, New York. So I believe that to be the pizza capital of the world.
Okay, I've heard that.
Brooklyn has good pizza, yes, but a lot of those old school pizzerias that they've had are long gone. There's a couple left. Staten Island, to me, it's literally every other street corner, every plaza, there's pizza. I used to drive back into Staten Island to grab a couple of pies from like Joe and Pat's or Danino's, and I'd bring it back, and it would all go in Ziploc bags in the freezer, and I would just throw them in the oven when I wanted it. Same thing with bagels. So there is very good pizza in New Jersey. Don't get me wrong. It took me a good 4 years to find different restaurants that I go to, and I don't have one go-to as far as it depends on the type of pizza. Regular pizza, I have one place. I want artisan pizza, I go to another place. I have one of our sponsors, Esposito's Pizza and Pasta. They're in Mattawan and Manasquan. Cheap plug.
Shout out.
They have the margarita pie with a pesto drizzle on a sesame seed crust.
That's
fantastic. Cool. So, like, I go there for that. I have a different place I go to just for food. If I want super thin New York style, that's what makes me laugh, is that the thin crust in New Jersey is called New York style. Ah. So if your pizza is number one in the United States, but it's considered New York style, is it really New Jersey?
Ah, well played.
So I have different places that I go to in New Jersey. It took me a long time to find all that. You know, like I said, Esposito's, they've gone to Vegas. They've won first prize for that particular pizza I was telling you about with the pesto drizzle. It all depends on the things that they go to, the contest. You know, yes, a place in New Jersey won the best pizza in for that contest. It doesn't really make that the New Jersey as a whole the number one pizza in the United States. Yeah, that particular pizzeria won first prize in that contest. That's great. But I think push comes to shove. If you polled, you know, 100+ people in New Jersey who have eaten pizza in Staten Island or Brooklyn, they'll tell you that they'll never leave New York without grabbing pizza. Can the same thing be said about people that live in New York that go to Jersey? Will they ever say, hey, I can't leave Jersey without trying the pizza?
Very well said, man. You bring up some valid, like this was, you brought some like really valid thought out points to the conversation, man.
Oh, you're going to be like, Nazi, bro.
Oh dude, I was going to say, I thought for sure, like you're going to be like, oh yeah, try this place. You're like, you thought it out, man. Everything you're saying, man, makes total sense. I can't argue with that, bro. But getting back to obviously the shameless promo with the signings and all that stuff, man. Again, we love seeing you bring people in. It's great. Shout out to our friends at the Wrestling Universe. Always love going there. Yeah. Shout out to our boys. Wrestling is everything. We saw some of them yesterday, man. I just love all the support from the fans, man. So two-parter for you. What does it mean to you to get to, you know, these return customers and the support from all these fans? You know, again, shout out to those Wrestling is Everything guys. And then who else do you like love to bring in and work with? Like, who are some of your favorites?
I'll give a shout out to Wrestling is Everything group too. They are a very loyal, devoted group of fans that show up to Wrestling Universe in Queens, and also their Comac store. I know I've seen pictures of them there as well. I have a signing in July there for the first time with Eric Rowan. And but I basically deal more or less in the one in Queens. And yeah, man, they're all outside. They're running 40, 50 deep, you know,
it's amazing.
You know, they're good people. Like, look, wrestling fans are a special kind of crazy. And I say that with all the respect in the world, because, you know, they're all nuts, but they're all passionate, you know, and I love seeing every other weekend or every weekend, whenever I'm there, I love seeing them. You know, it's like, I walk there and I feel like if anybody's ever been a fan of the TV show Cheers, when Norm would walk in and everybody would be like, Norm, you know, it's like me. I walk down the street and everybody's like, Kevin. I'm like, yo. And my talent looks at me and they're like, yeah, you been here before?
Nice. That's good for the talent to see, though. And who do you like working with? Or do you not want to play favorites?
No. I mean, look, I as far as talent wise, one of my favorite to work with is Eric Bischoff. He's very loyal to my brand. He's loyal to my family. You know, he's a businessman, so he knows how business is done and how it's done properly. And he always wants to make sure that, you know, we make the best decisions that make money, you know, and it's easy for a talent to say, hey, you know, I get X amount of dollars. And in their mind, it's like, as long as I get my money, I don't give a shit what you do. You know, if you lose money, oh, well, I got paid. Eric's not like that. Eric's like, hey, let's figure out, you know, the demographics, how many people are going to be there.
Wow.
Your best interest, you know, what's the best interest for your company? You know, do you have the best opportunity to make money? If not, what can we do to make sure that you do? And
wow.
he's like that. And, you know, that's, you look at him, that's his, all his years in this industry as a businessman, as someone making these decisions. You know, he catches a lot of heat and gets shit on because of how WCW went under. The bottom line is WCW doesn't go under if AOL Time Warner doesn't decide they don't want wrestling on TV anymore. So WCW would have been pretty much the equivalent to Impact Wrestling now, a company with no network or no network that anybody can watch. There wasn't streaming on YouTube back then, so that wasn't an option. So there was no, you know, apps where you can log on, go to the WCW app, watch, you know, Nitro and Thunder and all these shows live. You know, there wasn't any of that back then. So their options were TV or nighty night. And that's what happened. And, you know, yeah, they made a lot of stupid booking decisions and a lot of egos. They let a lot of guys run the show in the back, but all of that ratings wise is still high. Would have, even at the end, their ratings are higher than what Impact is drawing now. So they would have been able to survive if they had the platforms back then, which they didn't. So you can't blame that on Eric. You can't say he's the reason why WCW crumbled and went under. And AOL Time Warner wanted no part. And that's why they sold WWE to Vince McMahon for basically pennies on the dollar, which was, you look back now, that's pretty embarrassing. It's a slap in the face of all the talent that were on that show. And then he just cherry picked who he wanted. And then he literally embarrassed them on TV, you know, on his brand. You know, the whole invasion angle was an embarrassment, but it, you know, it is what it is. So Eric's a businessman. So he knows, yeah, he's been back and forth with them a couple of times. So he knows the good, the bad, the ugly, and the absolute filthy. Like, he knows all of it. And I, you know, I love working with him. I love, like, feeding off of his positive energy and the fact that he wants the industry to continue to make money. It's not, he's not a bitter man sitting at home shitting all over talent because he's no longer part of it. If you listen to his podcast, you know, it's very, very rare and far between that you even hear him say a negative thing about anybody that's currently on TV.
Wow, man, that's crazy, man. And just you saying that, he's, because, you know, a lot of times, like, I mean, and that's their job, to be the talent and come sign and interact with the fans and end of the day, you know, and figure out all the money stuff, whatever. But the fact that he puts in the time, like, hey, how can we do this? Like, it's like he's almost doing extra. I mean, and if anyone could do it, I'm sure it's Eric Bischoff, man. So that's really that's cool to hear, man.
He's definitely in the top of my list. If I did a top three, he's definitely in the top of my list as far as the males are concerned. Females is a little harder because I've worked predominantly. I think if you look at my client list, I'm like 88% female, as far as, and they look, bottom line, sex sells, and they all know, you know, some female wrestlers don't like to hear it, but they'll be the first one to tell you that they put a photo out of them wearing as little as possible, they make money. And they're the first ones to tell you that sex sells. You look at anything on TV that's geared towards female, there's always like a sexy commercial or some sexy look or some sexy music in the background or, you know, something. It's just, that's just the way it is. And, you know, we're not trying to exploit that because we're bringing in a talent trying to make them money, especially on the indie side, where sometimes we bring them in, we're not even taking a dime from them. We're just trying to give them a little exposure to the public. whether it's to fans, other promoters, vendors, things like that. A perfect example was Thunder Rosa. We brought in when she lived on the West Coast. Nobody even knew who she was. She didn't even want to come over here. She was so scared to come over here, saying that there's no way I'm going to make any money. Nobody knows me. You know, I said, look, leave that to us. You know, I consider myself a marketing guru. You know, I know how to get the work, the name out, and I know how to get the where we're going to be, what we're doing, things like that. And her career boof took off after she came to the East Coast, made some appearances, got in the ring, did work for a couple of programs out here. And then, like, you know, every other week, it's like, hey, Kev, can you get Thunder Rosa? Hey, Kev, have Kev. And I'm like, whoa. I'm like, you know, I'll get you in touch with her. You know, this is, you know, and then, you know, now look at her. I mean, she's wrestled all over the planet Earth. You know, she's former NWA Women's Champion. She's on AEW TV pretty much like every other week.
She's my match of the year. She's my match of the year right now with Britt Baker. She's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, and I did, you know, I did the same thing with Nyla Rose. I was booking Nyla Rose when she was just an indie talent and nobody even heard of. She was the first talent, along with Angel Orsini, formerly of ECW, when I did my first ever big event in the one across the street, the LaGuardia Plaza.
Okay.
The first show I ever did there, that was one of my guests. The year before that was, I don't know where it was. It was a hotel down the block. There was Big Event 6. My first guest there were the Down Boys, which one was 17, the other one was 18. Oh, wow. And if anybody doesn't know who the Down Boys are, they are who you've been seeing on AEW Dark as Jersey Muscle Society.
Yeah.
So I've taken these chances, you know, with talent that many people don't know, the Deanna Purrazzos of the world. I was booking Deanna Purrazzo and Jordynne Grace. Jordynne Grace was 17 years old when we booked her. Deanna Purrazzo was only in the business 8 months when we booked her.
Wow.
So magic touch? Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, no, those are some amazing like women that you mentioned, and obviously like the heroes of
and they're amazing women. Look, don't get me wrong, these women are talented and they're amazing and they market themselves beautifully.
Yes.
So who knows where, you know, before we cross paths where they would have wound up being, but you know, I'm just happy to say, hey, you know, they're part of the Damage family and that I was able to bring them in early. Because now, you know, if I reach out to them, we have that loyalty aspect. They're like, hey, Kev, you know, absolutely. Whatever you want to do, we'll do. You know, boom, you were there since day one. Another one I want to throw out there was this talent just did a signing elsewhere after mine. And their first questions out of their mouth was, you know, how is Nasty's virtual signing? You know, how'd it go? And blah, 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 blah. You know, passive aggressive weenie shit. And they turned around and she goes, well, Kevin was the first one to take a chance on us and we'll do pretty much anything, you know, he wants to do because, you know, we love him. And that's Camille Brickhouse of the NWA.
Sure. NWA. Yeah, sure. You know,
I brought her into New Orleans back in 2018 at WrestleCon when she was Camilla Kane.
Oh, yeah. She's fantastic. Another one. It's fantastic too, man. That's great. But dude, like you're killing it. We talk about like all these great names that you brought in and the fans, like, you know, I love meeting Camille, Thunder Rosa, shameless plug, former guest of the show. She was great. And one of the hardest working women in the business. Absolutely. She's doing everything.
And she's
right
nuts.
Now.
She's absolutely nuts. People don't know if people watch her in her videos and it always seems like she's drinking like, you know, 35 Monster energy drinks. That's the way she is literally the minute she rolls out of bed. And I will tell you for a fact, she has spent a month at my house, and then many other weekends and she was in her and Holodead were at my wedding. They were at my wedding.
I love that.
They slept at my house. They like literally crash at my house. If they're in between bookings from one state to another and I'm in the middle, like, hey, they just show up.
That's all.
She's nuts. Like she's up at like 9 o'clock in the morning, yelling, screaming. She goes to the gym. She comes home. She's wired. She got the dogs going nuts in my house. You know, she's just a lightning bolt.
I love that, man. That's so cool to hear, dude. That, and that's great, man. That's what it's all about. I did want to ask you this one. I was like the hypotheticals here, but like, who is someone you talk about the Damage 365 family and you're talking about like getting people in and you see like these careers blowing up, but you could go past, present, like up and comer. Like, who is the, like the dream person that you would love to work with or book that you haven't yet?
Obviously, I guess we have to go with people that are still alive. So
I guess, yeah.
You know what? I have a lengthy list. I don't want to go through it, but I'll show you real quick.
I'm not fishing. Don't worry, I'm not fishing for exclusives.
We got one page.
Oh, okay.
Two page.
Okay. Okay.
Three page. So
I'm gonna screenshot and zoom in.
Yeah, dude.
I'm kidding. You
know, I would have loved to been able to work with David Arquette. You know, a lot of people crap on him, about the WCW run. And look, it was to push a movie that WCW financially backed. Putting a belt on a celebrity, maybe not the greatest thing, but are we really seeing anything different now, you know, with the Gronkowskis and the Bad Bunnies of the world?
Yeah, you're not wrong, man. Makes sense.
Not much different, except, you know, they put a world title on him, but that put WCW in the forefront where they were like, whoa, you know, like, not only am I going to go see that movie now, even though it was terrible, I'm going to tune in because how the hell is this guy going to defend the title? And then looking at him, you say, wow, this guy's going to wrestle somebody? Like, he's going to get killed. But hey, Vince McMahon held numerous WWE titles, an ECW championship. You wouldn't have think that this guy's going to get in the ring. His son still wrestles, still jumps off things that are really high and misses. It is what it is, but I would have loved to just work with him. And we've been in touch numerous times, but it just, you know, things don't work out. And now I think he kind of lost his luster as far as people wanting to see him, I think, at this point. I don't really know. I would have loved to work with Vince Russo, another guy who kind of gets crapped on and at times rightfully so, but he's still of a piece of wrestling history. And I think fans would jump at the opportunity to come out and meet Vince Russo regardless. You know, a lot of people don't like, you know, I don't like Cornette. You know, he's a jerk. He says a lot of stupid things. But they understand his place in history and they still want to get that encyclopedia signed. They still want to get that card signed. They still want a photo op, you know, and then they'll go back to the internet and crap all over him later on. But it doesn't matter. They got, you know, they got to meet him. You know, another one on my hit list is Dixie Carter, formerly of Impact Wrestling. Yeah. I would love to work with her as well. We've been in communications too, but she doesn't like to leave her little ranch or whatever the hell she lives on. But, you know, that's just a couple. I mean, look, obviously everybody can be like, oh, I want to work with Hulk Hogan, brother. Yeah. Like, whatever. Doesn't do anything for me.
I got you, man. No, you're a businessman and you're making good decisions. You're bringing in not only just current talent, but people that you see have a bright future, man. You know me, I'm on the indie level here. And I think a lot of these goddesses and a lot of these superstars we see are the future, as we've been seeing, man. Like you mentioned, people popping up on AEW Dark, man. I love seeing the dreams come true. I'm sure you're very proud when you see people, you know, get this attention, get the spotlight, get signed, man. Like, what is that like for you, man, when you see people that you brought in early, like succeed and obtain their dreams?
I personally love it. You know, I usually, I don't watch the product. So I don't see, like, I hear that they're going to debut. I don't know exactly when, unless the talent tells me specifically. And then I literally tell them, no offense, I'm still not going to watch, but,
you keep it real. I respect it.
Yeah. I'll watch it on YouTube on the condensed version. You know, I'll post whatever you want. I'll share whatever you want. And I usually wake up the next morning, you know, to like 50 freaking PMs in my, Facebook messenger of like, oh my God, did you see, boom, link, you know, photo. And I'm just like, it makes me happy. You know, like, I'm like, wow. I'm like, you know, these women that I booked, you know, or these guys that I booked that they're now nationally, you know, telecast wrestling and all over the world, people are watching this. And I'm like, you know, this is pretty cool. And then in my mind, I'm like, well, when I call them, they better not be giving me no hard time about, hey, Kev, I'm on TV now. So and I'm going to be like, no.
Oh, boy.
Let's bring it down. Remember, you passed me on that ladder on the way up. You could pass me on the way down, too.
Oh, wow. See, that's my running joke with my friends. I'm like, once you start answering me or once you don't pick up the phone, like, no. I'll be happy, man. I'm not even going to be offended. I'm like, I'm happy for you. I know things are going. Once you start big timing me, then I'll be happy for you. But no, yeah,
I mean, look, I just had a running a conversation and joking around with Chelsea Green because we brought her in back in 2017 and 2018. And I was joking around with her and I was like, yo, don't be giving me no big time prices, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, and then also Thea Trinidad, you know, we brought her into Orlando in 2017. And it was literally the weekend she re-signed her contract with WWE to rejoin them after all those years. And she never stopped talking to us through that whole thing. And now that she's, you know, doing her own thing away from wrestling right now, you know, we still have occasional back and forth communication. So, you know, I remember stuff like that. You know, I'm not expecting to say, hey, you know, I worked with you 5 years ago. So I want a friends and family discount.
Yeah.
But if you pick up the phone or you answer my text messages, that's enough for me. You know, I'm like, All right, cool. You know, at least we still got the open communication. You know, I don't care about the price tags because I understand when you go from here to here, you know, there's going to be a price increase.
Yes.
Even if you fall from here back to here, it doesn't matter. Once you have that connection with, and I don't want to say AEW yet, because AEW doesn't have the merchandise that WWE has. The WWE has 4 encyclopedias of history, you know, 60, 70 years of history. AEW doesn't have that yet, you know. Maybe, you know, in 2040, you know, they'll have an encyclopedia for the first, you know, 20 years of their company and all the, you know, and everybody that's been a part of it at some point, you know, but anybody who's had that connection to WWE, NXT, WWF back in the day, WCW, ECW, that's all condensed into, you know, one historical book, or in this case, 4 of them. People want those books signed. It doesn't matter if you were there 5 minutes, you're in the book, they want it. You know, that's a completist, you know, they want to get that job done, you know. And I found that out easily when I had Zeta Zhang, we had Kimberly recently, one of our exclusive talents, CJ Dunning. You know, people, they're like, wow, oh, she was at she was in ECW. Oh, she was in NXT. How long? 10 months. Well, who cares? She was part of WWE. You know, I want her autograph. I want to meet her. And that's one thing WWE has over everybody right now.
Yeah.
Is that that history connection to the company and the brand, that people want to meet them regardless.
That's brilliant, man. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Like, again, you're looking at things from all angles, man. I appreciate that, man, and keeping it real. And, dude, I do want to be respectful of your time, man. This has been great, a lot of fun. I feel like I learned a lot of stuff, too, man. I'm taking notes over here. But tell everyone, we're all about the Shameless Promo, where people can follow you on socials, where people can kind of, you know, see when these upcoming signings are coming, all that good stuff.
Our website is d365promotions.com. We pretty much have everything on there, from past talent to current things that are going on, our calendar, way to contact us. We have, if we do have private signings, when we're allowed to actually go near people again, you know,
you know, getting there. WWE
level, when we could do some private signings, those are things that are on there. Pre-sales for any conventions we got coming up, like Baltimore Celeb Fest in 2 weeks. You know, our pre-sales are up there. On Twitter, we're at Damage365 Radio. Instagram, D365_promotions is the business page. Damage365 Radio is my personal page. If you want to see pictures of my food and my dogs, those are on there. Or my dogs eating my food, one or the other. That's all on there. Or me planting stuff in the garden. You know, I'm just
Oh, cool.
You know, just the life and times of me. You know, when you work from home now, you have a lot of spare time to dig in the dirt. So
love it, man. Hey, you're living the dream, man. I'm glad things are going well. Everyone be sure to follow my man over here. And dude, just thank you for a few minutes of your time. This is long overdue. And continued success to you moving forward. All right.
Thank you.
All right. Like we always say here on the BCP, everyone stay safe, stay positive, take care of each other. We out. Peace.